All right, it's Thinking Out Loud from KBIA. We've got a book coming out from a local author here in just a few weeks we want to tell you about on this evening's show. We've had her on the show before talking about some of what she's written, both books and plays. And the new book is called Haunted Columbia, Missouri, and it's just full of some really great ghost stories from our area. It's Mary Burriel. And Mary, it's so great to have you back in. Welcome.
Oh, it's nice to be back. Thank you.
Tell us about Haunted Columbia, Missouri, because you've done this before with some of the regional ghost stories, but this one is just stories specific to Columbia, right?
Yeah, it's Columbia, a little bit about the region. I go up to Roachport and a little bit east and south. But as I collected for The Haunted Boonslick, which was the first book, I came across so many stories that just needed to be told. So I stick them in a file, and all of a sudden you have a book.
Whether or not people actually believe in spirits, ghosts, Ouija boards, the supernatural, whatever, these stories linger, and these stories, people enjoy them. Why do you think people love these stories so much?
You know, every time I speak with groups, I speak for the Missouri Humanities Council in their Speakers Bureau, and I always start a discussion by saying it's got nothing to do with belief. You know, everybody has a personal belief system, and it's personal, mm-hmm. you know. But I think ghost stories tell us a lot about who we are from whatever aspect. If you want to take it from history, if you want to take it from anthropology, folklore, religion, it always tells us about things we fear. Certainly we fear death.
Yeah.
It is a mystery. We fear loss. We fear the unknown, and ghost stories tend to reflect these fears and let us control them a little bit.
Obviously, when we talk about Columbia, one of the things that people associate is the University of Missouri, and since we are here on campus, you were telling me before some good stories from the old med school.
Oh, yes. Well, the university has quite a number of spirits wandering the campus, which I think is a great deal of fun. One of the stories I came across in doing the research for this book had to do with the fact that in early days, the med school at MU did not have its own building. Where Peace Park is, it had a Victorian house, an older house, and that's where they did dissections until people in the summer complained, neighbors complained about it.
Yes.
Yeah. So funding was raised to build a med school. It was in Noyes Hall, McAllister Hall. And they put in an operating theater, and nurses were there and such. The one thing, of course, medical students very often lacked at that time were bodies. You could only get bodies from unclaimed if they had been executed, if the people had died at a poor farm, or were unidentified. And of course, there were not enough bodies to go along, you know, to go around to the different universities. You had Kansas, you had St. Louis, you had mm-hmm. the University of Missouri, and just not that many free bodies. So the university, some of the members got, there was a doctor who got quite creative. There are some letters from him in the archives that indicate that for more than 25 years, he was able to get the bodies needed. And he says that he went through many adventures in doing so.
Oh, my.
So we can only assume. We really don't know what happened to these bodies or where they are buried. But we do know that some of them were more than likely acquired at railroad stations. They would make deals there. There are stories of that. You know, you'd have agreements with police if they found a dead body. So you were always competing with other medical schools and other doctors.
The vision people get of the University of Missouri, the visual cue that you're on this campus, is the columns. And as most people recall, the columns are what is left of a building, academic hall that burned down many years ago. Jesse Hall, which still stands, was built sort of as the replacement for academic hall. But those columns are still there, right in the middle of the quadrangle. And there were some stories that went along with that were pretty darn spooky.
Well, there were at least two sets of murders in the old academic hall with the columns that still exist, which were, of course, the front of the hall when it burned. They both took place in the 1850s. If people are concerned about student behavior today, they should have been around in the 1850s, when many students carried guns and swords, challenged each other to duels, which were illegal, but still were used to settle gentlemanly discussions. And at least one set of students were boarding off campus, but they were University of Missouri students. And one accused the other of cheating at cards. And all their friends thought, well, okay, that's over with. You know, they got them to apologize to each other. And several days later, one of the students was coming out from class, and the other one attacked him on the portico of Academic Hall. He had a knife and a gun. The student who was being attacked managed to slam him, by all accounts, against the wall. And in the scuffle, he was killed. So one of the legends is that the blood was still visible for many, many years, would not scrub off of the area around the column. And that's also why the ivy does not grow on the columns. It's a belief that they're cursed.
I remember the fact that there was one of the columns that the ivy would not grow on. The other ones it would.
I mean, there are other stories, too. One is that two young men fought, or they dueled over the a young woman,
mm-hmm.
And one was killed, as a matter of fact. They were soldiers. And another one was that a student and a teacher in the 1850s got into essentially a duel and had a fight, and one was killed. So the area around the columns was quite an area of activity. And when you have areas of activity for murders, for suicides, for disappearances, you get ghosts.
We're talking with Mary Burriel here. Again, the book is called Haunted Columbia, Missouri, and it'll be out in just a couple of weeks and be available where you go buy books. The courthouse, Boone County Courthouse downtown, which is this historic old building, and I saw that in there. Tell me about the story with that one.
Well, a lot of times what I get reports from people, I try to collect stories. I like to know that there's some kind of a history behind it. But what I get a lot, particularly in an area like Columbia with quite old buildings, I very often get a lot of, I hear footsteps, there's somebody in back of me. I spoke to people who work there, and it was always a sense that somebody was following them around, like the old Hayden House.
Oh, yeah.
The same thing there. I think that was Susanna or Sarah. So very often where people have lived and worked for a long time, one of the theories is that if somebody dies, they either don't know they're dead, so they continue doing what they did, whether that's working in the courthouse or serving people food, or they're trapped there. So there's lots of theories about ghosts.
One of my favorites that I want you to share with us, which I have actually recited myself at an event we did over at the Chancellor's Residence a few years ago at Halloween, is the Blind Boone story. And this is such a great story, and it relates to the piano, which is still at the County Historical Museum, but was at Douglas High for so many years.
Yeah, well, that was a really interesting one. Blind Boone, John William Boone, of course, his home has now been restored.
Yeah.
And he was a pioneer in classical music. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on your view, he's recognized as the one of the early ragtime pioneers, when in fact he was a genius at classical music as well. Boone was well-loved around the city, and contributed to many of the buildings here, the Second Baptist Church and many other buildings.
Sure.
I was giving a speech once about, Boone, and I had read that Mary Paxton Keeley had interviewed people who knew him or lived in Columbia, and she was asking what they thought of the music, and there was a young woman there with a daughter. And the young woman said to her, this was in the 1950s or early 60s, that, she loved Blind Boone's music. She loved to listen to him play. And Mary thought, well, this is a little odd. And she said, well, you're only 30 years old. He died in the 1920s. How would you have heard him play? She goes, oh, I hear him play at the Douglas School all the time. And she said, my daughter and I, we walk by there. We can hear him play on summer nights. And it's his music. She goes, nobody plays like Boone. And you write that off to what a really nice story, because, yes, his piano through a big, big story, deserves its own book, was at the Douglas School, disappeared, and is now wonderfully preserved at the Boone County Historical Society.
And I should point out that in addition to the fact that it's got the historical significance, because Boone was probably one of the couple of really, really famous people that have come from Columbia, mm-hmm. it's not just the historical significance, but it's just the sheer bulk. Boone was a huge guy.
Yes.
And he played the piano like an offensive lineman. I mean, he pounded the hell out of it, and he used to bust up pianos, and so this thing was built specifically to handle his aggressive playing style.
It's a Chickering. It's has a lot of metal in its frame, and he went through 12 pianos.
Jeez.
And I was at one event, and a woman comes up to me, and she's got an elderly woman with her, and she said, "I want you to meet my mom." And I said, "Oh, that's lovely."
Yeah.
So she goes, "No, you don't understand. This is the woman who heard Boone." And I spoke to her, and she said, "Oh, yeah, we hear him every night." And she named some of the tunes they heard. I don't know what she heard, but she could explain exactly what it was they heard him playing over in Douglas School.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to think he is still around Columbia and still happily performing, and we just need to listen a little closer.
And my favorite part of the story that I got to tell was the fact that one of the songs he wrote was Marshfield Tornado, about the very famous tornado in Marshfield, Missouri, and somebody heard the sound that sounded like John William Boone playing the Marshfield Tornado from out of the window at Douglas mm-hmm. School as a tornado is headed toward Columbia.
Yeah, those are the things that you would love to try to explain, and you sometimes just can't, so you go with them.
That's fantastic. Well, the book is called Haunted Columbia, Missouri. Mary Bareil is our guest, and as we're closing our time up here, just tell people how they can get a hold of a copy of the book, because there's a lot more stories like this, and it's great fun.
It'll be around town, of course, Barnes & Noble, of course, online, anywhere, so just look for it.
All right. Haunted Columbia, Missouri. And do you have an exact date as to when this is coming out?
September 5th.
September 5th. So it's just a few weeks away, and we'll look forward to seeing that. Mary, good luck to you. I hope it sells a lot of copies, and I'm glad that you had great fun putting this together, and we'll have great fun reading it.
Thank you.